RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 10-12-60 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Everybody, welcome to Crush Performance. We got a really, really big show here today. I'm Jeff Crushell. The con man is here behind the glass, and we're live in studio with one of my favorite bands, my good friends, The Whale and the Wolf Boys. Thanks for coming in studio today. I'm really fired up.
We're stoked to be here, man.
All right. Yeah. Hey, so today, everybody, we are going to be talking about some of the interdisciplinary learning that's been going on out there. You know, we go from sport to sport. We look at business and music, and we try to put everything together to form a model of what talent and talent development is all about. And boys, I'm telling you right now, a lot of the research coming out of the talent development world comes from music. And I'm so glad you guys can come in today. We're going to play some music. We're going to ask you guys some questions. And we've got a great text question of the day today.
I'm excited to learn, too. We're going to learn alongside you, man. I'm excited to dig in.
All right. So how about it? Let's have at it, boys.
Cool, man. Let's play a song for you.
Okay, here we go.
The song's called Do It Loud.
Cross your heart and hope to die. Move your lips, tell another lie. If you're going to curse, choose your words wisely. Break out that dirt, baby, show me your skin. I wanna know, wanna know, wanna know where you've been. And if you tell me first, we can do this quietly. We can do it diamond ring, cop that plea just to change your name. Of her folks, she just doesn't think too highly. Well, break out that dirt, baby, show me your sins. I wanna know, wanna know, wanna know where you been. And if you tell me first, we can do this quietly. Oh, we can do it loud.
Thank you very much. Hey, everybody, we are live in studio today on Crush Performance with our good friends from The Whale and the Wolf, the founding members of this great up-and-coming band. Boys, I want to thank you once again for coming in studio.
Man, our pleasure.
Listen, I've been looking forward to this show for quite some time. We've been working on this for about a year.
Yeah, we've been trying to connect the dots on dates that work. You know, we're out of town quite often. You know, you were just in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I just got back, and it was a fantastic trip from there. So to actually pull this off and get you guys in studio is great. And for everybody listening today, it's going to be a fantastic show. A lot of the research on talent and talent development comes out of the music world. Last week, we had on a gentleman by the name of Jeff Colvin, a Crush favorite by by the way. He is senior editor at large for Fortune magazine, and he's authored four or five books, but two books that really, really interest us. And one is called Talent is Overrated. And his latest book, which we talked about last week, was called Humans Are Underrated, looking at the changing world of talent and the workforce and what's going to be needed in the future. And in order to really steer the developmental process, we try to learn from every avenue possible, and music's a big one. So I'm glad to have you guys in. Such a great day today. I just came from my nephew Mason's 12th birthday.
Happy birthday, Mason.
It was, let me just show you this. I'll reach into the old bag. It was a Nerf gun, So I brought out the heavy artillery and I showed those young bucks what it's all about. So it turned out to be a great day. But, you know, I was watching the boys play. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things that I really want to talk to you guys tonight. You know, I was up there with my brother-in-law. We're up on their deck just watching the boys run around the yard. They set up these obstacles and they're just running around
always
playing.
Always something, hey?
They're just playing, though, guys. Unstructured play.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we talk about you guys, and I want to get into your career and your history, you guys are good Canadian boys. You guys are coming from Saskatchewan.
Yep.
Brendan's coming from a small town in rural Alberta.
Callahoo.
Yeah. It might be interesting for you guys to know, in sport, sociologists have found this phenomenon called the birthplace effect. And so I'm going to challenge you guys off right off the bat just to see what you guys think. So if we look at the top performers in the world, and if we focus on the world of sport, a lot of the data that we have is on sport. If we focus on the top performers, the world-class guys, the pro athletes,
sure.
Would you guys think that the majority of the world's top performers come from big major centers or smaller towns or mid-sized towns? What would you guys just intuitively think?
If I was to guess, I would say the smaller towns.
Me too. I'm just trying to do the math in my head on like the Sidney Crosbys from Cole Harbour. I don't know the population base there. I know isn't Connor McDavid, don't want to get this wrong, but isn't it Newmarket, Ontario or something like that? Don't know what the population base there is, but just sort of the towns that I can think of, some of the big superstars are all from smaller towns, aren't they?
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think if we look across the board to high performers in music, for example, we know some of them come from the big cities.
Sure.
Yep.
But you guys are 100% right. And so we have Lucas Holt here, who is the bassist. We have Ryan Meyer, who's sort of the lead singer. And Brendan, you come from a small town. So I wanted to, you're the lead guitarist, right? You come from a small town. If I were to ask you, where population base you think the majority of top performers come from, would you say they come from 2 million plus, 1,500,000, 250,000, 100,000, 50,000 to 100,000, or 50,000 smaller? And again, just for looking at the cities.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if you're from a small town, there's not a lot to do. So you kind of like pick up an instrument as something to do in a way.
And so are you going to go 50,000 less kind of thing?
Oh,
is that what your answer
is? I think so, yeah.
I'll tell you sort of
my place
our,
is 500.
From our sort of sample market here in Edmonton, all of the bands, all of the people who seem to be in sort of the music industry and excel in it, most of them are from Sturgeon County, which is Brandon Callahoo, would that fall into that?
Yeah.
Like just outside of here, sort of just north of St. Albert, if I'm getting the map right.
And like
there,
Gibbons area, and Bonacord area.
The Mayo,
too.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like so much of Edmonton's music scene is out of like that Sturgeon County area for whatever reason. Something in the water. I don't know.
So you guys nailed it. Listen to this. Here's some data from the NHL. In terms of current players, coming from population basis, 5 million plus, only 0.7%. From 50,000 or less, 39.1. In the NBA, 5 million plus, only 3.9% of current players come from those large markets. In the NBA, 28.2% come from towns smaller than 50,000. In the PGA, in golf, only 0.5% come from the large cities, 5 million plus. 45.7% come from the small towns. And in Major League Baseball, 1.8 from 5 million plus and 37.7% from the smaller towns, 50,000 plus.
What would you attribute that to? Would you say, I mean, Brandon, you made a good point. We've talked about this before, being sort of from these prairie towns. Lucas and I have pulled from Saskatoon, Brandon from just outside of town here. There isn't a whole lot more much to do. And also, I would also say that winter drives you indoors for us, that's where you play music. You know what I mean? Yeah. You have a jam space, you do your thing. So I don't know if there's something to do with that. But as far as the sports are concerned, would you think that it is because there are sort of there's less competition, therefore the coaches have more of a grasp on the kids and can sort of give them more time? Or what's it come down to?
Yeah, that is a definitely big part of the puzzle. Access to facilities.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Those kids coming from the small towns, listen, yep. they don't have enough players to sure. have a separate volleyball team and a separate mm-hmm. basketball team and a separate baseball team, hockey team. Those kids are playing every sport when they grow up as well.
Yeah.
So when they turn out to focus on a area of expertise, they're very well-rounded. So I guess my question to you guys, so it's consistent, and we see it from discipline to discipline, and you guys seem to be part of that picture as well. So Lucas, let me ask you, growing up in
Saskatoon,
yep. not a major center, so that's sort of midway.
You're about 200, 275 or something like that.
275, yeah. So if we look at, name one of the four sports, NHL, NBA, MLB, PGA, name one of the sports that you like.
Let's go MLB.
Okay, MLB. From that size of town, 17.8% of all players come from towns that size. So sort of a mid-sized town.
Sure.
Listen, access to facilities, multiple sports for certain, coaching and leadership is for sure. And that's all a big part of it. Let me ask you this. Yep. Were you guys into music as kids?
Oh,
when did it start for you guys?
Starting playing music, I started maybe a little later than most. I started in about grade 9, so that would be 14, sure. I'd imagine. But music was all around. My dad plays accordion, plays it mighty well. Like, we grew up with music always. I was always listening to music.
Church.
Like, it was always around, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. How about you?
It was the same kind of vibe as what Lucas said. Like, I think that I started playing guitar, and I want to say grade 6, but I always grew up singing. Well, it was kind of forced into
Your family
of,
band,
it's a
family, too, right?
My parents were in a band as well. So it's one of those things where you look at the NHL now and sort of what you would deem nepotism in a way, and that, like, oh, how many kids in the NHL have parents or uncles who played prior? Dads or, you know, a lot, right? Like, that's a growing number, I would assume, in the NHL.
In every sport, by the way.
So I would assume that it probably helps that your parents either played an instrument or pushed you into, like, singing or playing. I know that it wasn't pulling teeth to get me to practice the guitar, but maybe pulling teeth to, like, do a bit of the theory.
But
the
then also
stuff,
too, though, like, we both saxophone in band right now. Even that kind of stuff, we were.
School band is so important. Yeah. Brandon, how about you? When did you start? Is it a lifelong passion for you?
I was about 11 years old. It was kind of stemmed off a midlife crisis from my dad. And I got a guitar out of that. Yeah. And then I lived in the middle of nowhere. So it was either ride ATVs or motorcycles and play guitar. So,
and he did both at the same time once.
Yeah. So did a lot of hermiting in the winter home of just playing guitar. Iron Maiden songs.
And I love it, man. That's fantastic. That's right in my wheelhouse, fellas, for sure.
Good.
Hey everybody, we're in studio with Whale and the Wolf, a great up and coming band. You guys, 2015 was sort of maybe the starting point for the band. I know you guys have been around forever, but 2015 was sort of the starting point, and it has been an absolute whirlwind for you guys. I want to say I've known you guys for a long time, and I've heard the rumblings of the band early on, and I just, for what it's worth, I'm really, really proud of you guys.
Hey,
like,
thanks, man.
Like for what it's worth, but to watch you guys, you know, like, my athletes that we work with, I get to get my hands on them and help guide their careers, and, you know, some of them are now managing, some of them are GMs, some of them are on TV, some of them are still playing, changing the world. It's really great to see, and we're still helping develop those young players. The music industry is very, very similar. It takes grit, determination, and also a lot of perseverance.
Yep, and a little bit of luck. You know what I mean? Yeah. Here and there. There's a bit of that. I think there are a lot of parallels to sport. And since you and I started talking about this show and what it was going to kind of revolve around, I've been really cognizant of trying to, like, draw parallels into the kind of the sporting world, the preparation, the repetition, the practice, the superstitions and all that stuff that go into playing music, and sort of trying to find out, like, how that might move over into the locker room. And there's quite a few parallels between the two sort of realms and areas. And I think that in general, I want to say it might not have been a 30 for 30, but it was a documentary, and it was on the how music and the sports industry sort of go hand in hand in that, like, athletes, I think
athletes want to be musicians, and musicians
want to be athletes. So I think there's a bit of that. Yeah,
but I think it's that attitude, though. Like, to be successful in the music biz, and we're going to talk more about this as the show moves on, but to be successful in your business, you got to have a lot of that. just that. What would you call it?
I would call it. Here's the thing.
Confidence. You got to be sometimes a little bit cocky too, but in a good way.
Yeah. It's a fine line.
No. And it is. Yeah. But we see with our athletes. Some of those athletes are perceived as cocky. Mm-hmm. Arrogant. It's not. It's just confidence and dealing with the pressure.
Selling yourself too.
Well, too with an athlete big. Too. It's in one of those things where you have to have that mindset. Like, how can you be a great athlete if you don't think or believe that you're a great athlete?
Yeah.
Right?
So
yeah. Yeah, it's and the band, and I'm really excited to talk to you guys. We got to cut off for a quick break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk to you guys about the band, you guys working together as a team, and then the strength of the individuals. It's exactly, for me, the same as putting together a team, finding the right individuals to put it all together and make it all happen. All right, so we're going to cut off for a quick break. Thank you guys for coming in again. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, more with Whale and the Wolf as we investigate an interdisciplinary approach to talent and talent development right here on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
This is Jim Fannin, America's Zone Coach, and I'm excited about bringing my new podcast, The Jim Fannin Show, to RadioInfluence.com. Each week, we're going to talk about the zone and how this mindset can help you in all facets of your life. I'll give you all the tools you need to change your life and help guide you to become your genuine, authentic best self. With the only proven blueprint for attracting the zone mindset, I've helped transform millions of lives. In my 40 years of experience, I've coached CEOs and senior executives from 350 of the Fortune 500 companies in 50 different industries. I've coached professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hall of Famers, all pros, all stars, entertainers, and so many more to help them gain the tools and techniques to create a life of simplicity, balance, and abundance. And now it's my privilege to bring these methods to you every week, along with some of my champion good friends as special guests. If you want to get in the zone in all you do, check out the Jim Fannin Show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
Welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Crochelle here, and we are in studio live with one of my favorite bands, The Whale and the Wolf. Brendan, Lucas, and Brandon, and Raimai in the studio here today. Hey, if you want to get in touch with us, do so. CrushPerformance.com is the website. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush. On all social media platforms, Instagram, YouTube. You can get us on our YouTube channel as well, and Facebook at Crush Performance. Guys, I want to thank you again for coming in studio. I've been really, really looking forward to this show for quite some time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank
great.
You,
so we had a great opening discussion here, and I think we really set the tone in terms of talent and talent development. A lot of the research comes from music, and I just want to take a quote I heard this quote years and years ago. Luciano Pavarotti, who I totally respect in terms of his music, his performance, but his dedication to his art form.
I think that guy, the amount of work he would have had to put into his voice and preservation. And just, if you have a voice like that, you got to insure that thing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So here's what he said. Here's what he said. And this is a quote from Luciano Pavarotti, and it's been said time and time again. He said, if I don't practice for one day, I know it. If I don't practice for 2 days, my wife knows it. If I don't practice for 3 days in a row, the world knows it. Those were his words. Yep. And I've always thought that was pretty powerful. And I use this as an example when I talk to my athletes who are trying to master their craft as well. Again, the similarities between music and talent development in sport and business. We could talk about science. It doesn't matter. It's very, very similar. And it's interesting to note that when they started breaking down how do experts develop their skill set, music was even probably more interesting to the researchers than sport. And even though sport was so measured, the one thing they found with music, when they broke down world-class violinists, mm-hmm. first chairs, what makes a first chair violinist different from somebody who's just close or somebody who's third chair or backup? What makes those top performers really special? And here's what they said, and this leads us into a conversation about you guys and how you guys have gotten to where you're at in your music careers right now. They did it was a 20-year study looking at the development of elite violin players, and they were hoping that they would find some kind of innate talent, some kind of marker that would say, hey, this person was built to be a great musician or a great violin player. It didn't exist.
So there's no physical attributes.
Nothing.
Nothing to do with fingers. Nothing to do with anything like that.
No, maybe environment, maybe background. Like you, Rima, you said your parents, sure, church, yep, small town,
trees.
You know, those things. Right. You know, no doubt. But what they found, the only separator between the top performers and the second chair and third chair was practice time.
Oh, God. Yeah.
The hours of practice. And not just that, gentlemen, but how they practiced. So another question to start this off, not to put you guys on the spot, but maybe tapping into your knowledge and your approach to your music and mastery of your craft and your instruments and your music as a team. What's more valuable to you guys? Is it working together in a setting, putting on a show? Is that where you guys really learn? Or is it when you're working with your music teacher, mastering your craft under the guidance of a mentor or coach or teacher? Is it playing together with the guys, practicing, you know, separately with the guys, or is it individual practice time? Where did you guys find your power came from?
Well, I think with us at least, playing together for one has been huge, right? Like you got to know, like we've played in different bands, all of us before with different people. Some people you just don't gel with, right? With this group, the more that we play together, the more that we can figure each other out. As a bass player, we have a fairly new drummer, and it takes some time for the bass and drums to kind of get in a rhythm together where you know what he's going to be doing. So the more that you play with him, the more that it's helping the rest of us, right?
The bass and the drums have to. I mean, in a lot of ways, unless you're getting into certain genres where it's a bit more technical and all over the map, the bass and the drums, they are
hand
a heartbeat
in hand, yeah,
together.
But then also on the other hand, too, playing live, you know, what worked here, what didn't work here. Like all of it, it's not just a one, except for probably the teachers and stuff.
You kind of learn from every part of the aspect. Like you learn things from playing live. You learn things from watching bands play live. You learn things from playing on your own, trying to learn other songs, and you screw up and then you end up writing a song out of that.
Like,
yeah. But you know what a big part is? Screwing up.
Yeah.
When you screw up live, when it's something like, let's just say it's down to a technical aspect, like don't use that cable again. You know what I mean? Don't trust that. We play the Grey Cup Festival next Saturday.
Yes, so congratulations, by the way. That's a big stage.
We will be on the Nissan Titan stage next Saturday at noon. That's going to be right on Jasper Ave. Here's a good one that like you can only learn from experience. Cold weather wreaks havoc on tuning on your instruments. You can only learn that by having your instrument go out of tune playing in the cold. Luckily we've had that happen. I don't know, like, I mean, it's gonna be one of those things next weekend where it's gonna be like on the fly, like be cognizant of it, but like it's you only learn certain things playing live by having something go wrong,
right?
And then correcting.
But
it's also it's the amount of time too, like playing these shows and all this stuff, right? Like we only played two shows. Okay, something went wrong. Doesn't matter. But
Experience.
Playing over and over and over and over again.
Okay, interesting. We're in studio with Whale and the Wolf, one of my favorite bands, up and coming. And I'm just so proud of you guys, knowing you for so long and seeing where you're at right now. I can't wait to watch you guys just unleash on the world. Here's an interesting maybe bit of history for you guys from the music. And we really do. When we look at organizational performance, fellas, or whether it's individual performance, when we try to help our athletes, which is, of course, my world, tap into their potential and constantly push their ceilings upwards, we're always looking to other areas to understand what went on. Here's a really interesting one for me. And this sort of really epitomized the commitment, perseverance, but just the dedication to mastering the craft. The Beatles, okay, in Hamburg. They traveled to Hamburg five times between 1960 and 1962. And this is a very important story for anybody out there who's trying to aspire and master a craft. This is why Beatle historians, and if you ever hear Paul or some of the surviving members of the band talk, they'll say this is when the Beatles became the Beatles, between 1960 and 1962. On their first trip, they played 106 nights of five or more hours per night. On their second trip, they played 92 times. On their third trip, and this is all between 1960 and 1962, on their third trip, and this is before they were the Beatles as we know them. This is a young band just trying to understand who they are and how they fit together. The band members were together. They knew they had something special.
Yeah.
And they got this gig at this Hamburg, little seedy Hamburg nightclub in this shady part of town. And they were just playing and playing. Exactly, Lucas, what you were just saying. Okay, on their last two stints in Hamburg between November and December 1962, they played another 90 hours of performing. 1,200 performances between 1960 and 1962, and they say that's what made the Beatles.
It's insane.
But when you hear when you break down what they got out of that, it's exactly what you guys are saying. Yeah. They learned from their mistakes. They found out what worked, what didn't.
Found their sound in their sense too, right?
Like they're comfortable on their own skin.
Together. When you go in, and you know, I can't even imagine just working together as a team like you guys and feeding off each other. It's exactly like the first line in an NHL team or the offensive line in the NFL or, you know, it's just so fascinating to me.
Where I find we are lucky as musicians is with an athlete. Physicality is everything for the most part. Obviously, mental games a ton, but once the physicality wears out, your career, let's say it's the NFL, what's the lifespan on a running back? Isn't it something like outrageously?
31, 32 years.
So with that, I mean, as a musician, I feel like we are still getting better every single year we play. And you look at a guy like, I'll use Burton Cummings from the Guess Who. I mean, he can, you know, unless some sort of physical ailment comes on, an illness or whatever, he gets better every year. From what I've heard, like, my parents went and saw him out at the River Creek Casino a couple weeks ago, and he's playing the piano better. His voice is as good as it's ever been. And he's you learn every single year. And
Gordon Lightfoot just turned 80 today. Like, and he's, you know, amazing on the guitar, still great voice.
Yeah.
Like,
there's no end to growth.
Nope.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's why we're sort of lucky, is I feel like we still have yet to write our best song, and I just feel like we're going to get there. You know, the next 3 years are huge for us in a lot of ways, but I just feel like we've grown a lot as a band in the last year.
Yeah, and I agree. Listening to your sound develop, I love the early stuff as well, but your latest Staring at the Sky, fantastic. And again, you know, it's kind of interesting just to be from the, on the periphery watching you guys develop, but you can sort of hear the sound come together. So it's fun to watch, you know, some of my favorite songs you guys have, Touch, Do It Loud. I mean, there's so many good ones, but Staring at the Sky is a really, really cool approach, I think, that you guys have. So we're in studio right now with the founding members from Whale and the Wolf, Ryan Meyer, Brandon Yeagy, and Lewis Holt. Brandon, I wanted to ask you, okay, getting back to our original question, what was the most important time for development? Let's talk about mastering your craft. Lead guitarist, Lucas, bassist, guitar and vocals.
Yes.
Vocals is an instrument. Let's make no mistake, right? And it takes practice. Brandon, let me ask you this. Was there a time where you would just go disappear by yourself? What was that an important time for you?
I think it was more kind of like around that 11 to probably 16 years old, where you just kind of get obsessed with it. That's basically it. Like, I get home from school and I'd play guitar, learn as many old 80s metal songs as I could. And a lot of it too is surrounding yourself with other musicians that are better than you and that you just try and hang out with, and you learn things from them, and then you learn little tricks here and there, and you just keep learning stuff. That's all kind of what I did. I was self-taught, so I didn't really
self-taught.
It's just more like just hermit in my room and just play everything as wrong as possible until you figure it out. I don't know.
Interesting. In the studies, guys, on musicians, on those top musicians, when they broke down and asked them and surveyed them what their most important time was, the most impactful time for them mastering their craft as performers, was that individual practice time, like you just said. And so it's fascinating to hear you guys talk about this, because it's exactly what the research says. And so, you know, you guys are living it and putting it all together. So in order to put the team together, you guys have to be good enough to be part of something like this. So you have to master your instruments, which you guys have done. Then you got to put the team together. Let's talk about this. How does that work in the music world?
Well, okay, there's what the people see, the people who watch us. Let's just say we have an hour set. We play 60 minutes, okay? Now, I mean, that's basically people's snapshot of the band. They like us or they don't like us or whatever it is. But it's just like that entire day was dedicated to those 60 minutes in a lot of ways. And a lot of that dedication is just being together. You have to get along. There's so many bands that we come across, and I would say more bands than not, that like, they don't love each other. You know what I mean? And it's just conflicting personalities and whatnot. I think that we are very lucky and blessed, like all legit get along and be friends outside of it. I like to liken it to a marriage in a lot of ways. Obviously there's not some of the fringe benefits that a marriage has.
But which is okay.
But it's very much balanced. Like everyone, like we need to, I think when we get together and we write in studio, it's a very democratic process. No one's really pulling any punches and no one's like really taking the reins on it. Everyone, I think for the most part, things get heated, which they should. And you need, and we're not all pushovers and all that, but I think it is very much so like everyone gets their say, everyone's heard, and it's a vote in the end.
And too, like the longer you play, the more you kind of realize what your strengths are, and everyone has their own strengths and you work off each other's strengths too when it comes to that.
So let me ask you this, guys. This has got to be tough to self-govern, because on teams you have general managers holding guys accountable and you have coaches holding players accountable, and depending on the sport. Do you guys have a coach or a manager or somebody that holds you accountable? Like, hey, why didn't you practice today?
Is there
a neutral person?
Ryan Hold. He'll call you out and that's a real bow wow or whatever.
Hey, but that's important though.
It is.
If you guys are going to keep pushing your ceiling as musicians higher and higher and together as a group higher and higher, somebody has to make sure there is accountability and expectations. The downfall, I know you're sports guys too. We could talk about the teams right now. We could probably pick out the teams in every sport where accountability doesn't exist because the expectations aren't clear. So I'd imagine in the music world for you guys to really crack this incredibly competitive world of music, right? That's got to be a big part of the plan. Is that part of the plan? Is it part of the matrix of the band, Whale and the Wolf?
You are like sort of just to
expectations, accountability for making the band better. Like I'm, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, everyone's got to come to the table. I mean, we've never had a problem with that. The question's always there. Like, hey, like, I don't think there's ever really been a commitment issue. Everyone's like full on. Obviously, everyone's got their lives outside of it and whatnot. And that's another thing that involves balance. Like, hey, like I'm going to be gone for a week here, honey. You know what I mean? Like those conversations are had. But I think for the most part, everyone's on the same page. And I think once again, like balance. Yeah. You got to find a meet in the middle with everything.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Hey, everybody, we're in the studio with Whale and the Wolf talking talent development. Again, a lot of the research on talent development comes out of the music world, and we're live in studio with guys who are living that dream right now. No different than C-level executives downtown in your city, the politicians who are running the countries, the athletes who are performing on TV and competing on the world stage. It's a competitive world, and there's so many parallels in all these different disciplines. Let me ask you guys this. So, with the master plan, you guys have come a long way in the last little while. You guys have a big show coming up, and that's going to be the main focus, playing at the Grey Cup, which is, hey man, that's as big as it gets here in Canada. It's going to be some great PR for you guys. When we talk about long-term development for our athletes, all right, we start off with just fundamentals. And that was why it was great seeing my nephew and his buddies just running around, unstructured, you know, getting exercise and just having fun. Then we train, train to train, and then we train to compete, and then we compete to win. You guys are at a very advanced stage. You're in a stage where, if we're going to run an analogy, you're competing to win now, right?
Yes, yep.
And so what does that look like in terms of planning? Now, strategic events, are you guys still trying to master your crafts, like individually on the guitars, the drums?
Well, I think with the musical side, the instrument side of it, like when Brandon was talking about from the ages of 11 to 16, you know, all that he did, guitar. And I think you see at that age where a drastic growth on that, right? You can see from when you started picking up to now you can play a couple of songs. After that, you know, you might not notice a big drastic change, but you're continuously evolving and getting better and getting better. Might not be as visual that everyone else can see, oh, he can actually play a song now, but you know, the little things that that you don't really focus on, like you want to play a G chord, but now you're mastering that G chord in order to move into different parts of the song. Like I think you know what I'm talking about, right?
I know what you're talking about.
You can learn to skate, but then you can also learn to properly skate and skate faster, use different parts of your
What head. Makes that first chair violinist? They can all play a G chord, but why is that G chord? Just what's so different about the
I think
G-chord?
A lot of it is like just from experience and being able to translate it more comfortably live. The more you play live, and I, like even when we started, I actually like, I, I watch a video from 2014 of us playing at Boonstock in Penticton. One of my favorite shows of all time. I remember, like, yeah, you look like you feel like you're kicking ass. I was like, shit. I was like, oh man, you're not doing very good. Yeah, beat that, please. I swear on honor.
But yeah, you look, but, you're kind of saying.
It's,
yeah.
It's one of those things where the more experience you get, the more you're comfortable in your own skin and how you want to people to perceive you while you're on stage.
Okay, so we got to cut off for a quick break here. Brandon, how about this? Can you recreate one of the Iron Maiden riffs, like when you were back there? What would it sound like when you're 11, and what does it sound like now? Is that possible?
It might sound the same at this point.
but could you go back and recreate maybe what it sounded like when you were like 11, 12, 13?
Yeah, this is the first Iron Maiden song I ever learned. It probably sounds worse now. It's no one will ever recognize this, but it's like, but it was just like this little tapping thing, which
yeah. Still sounded pretty good.
That sounded pretty good.
Like the troop, everyone's like the kind of like that.
For a quick break on this fantastic stuff. When we come back, we're going to talk about songwriting, because that's a question I want to talk to you guys about, and we'll finish off our conversation on mastery and talent development in music. All right, thanks guys. We'll be right back, everybody.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now here he is, the Crusher.
Everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. We are your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you have questions, comments, smart remarks, get to us. We love them all. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on social media, Instagram, Facebook, our YouTube channel. Check out Crush Performance. Hey, a really big show today. I was looking forward to this show for so long. We're live in studio with our good friends from the up-and-coming band Whale and the Wolf, Ryan Meyer, Brandon Yagi, and Lewis Holt in studio. Guys, thanks for joining us again. It's been a fantastic discussion today as we look into some of the data and research coming out of the music world on talent and talent development. So how about this? Let's kick this last segment off with some of your fantastic music here, sure. And then we'll get into the process of songwriting.
Sure. We'd love to, man. We'll play a song called Shiver real quick.
Yeah. All right.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4. Nothing short of walking on water toward the sun to find my love. I'd eternally wander, a risk to take, a promise to deliver every ounce of strength I'll give up on Devil's Lake. I hold on by a sliver, ain't no way I'm letting my baby shiver. Far beyond this cannon fodder, but stars have shone and led me on the search for your daughter. Although the sun has now begun to burn even hotter, I'll be the one, can't be undone by my mother nature. To take a promise to deliver every ounce of strength I'll give her on Devil's Lake. I hold on by a sliver, ain't no way I'm letting my baby shiver.
Oh, Vance. fantastic, boys. Fantastic. Great sound. Again, Whale and the Wolf. Check out their great stuff. WhaleandTheWolf.com is the website. Guys, thanks for that. Hey, listen. Let's talk about this with the last minutes we have left. This is a question that I've had personally. Of course, just being a kid, fan of music, love it. The songwriting process. Like, how do you come up with that? How do you come up with that song? Let's go back to that song right there. Sure. Where does it start? I often wonder, does it start with a note or a chord? Does it start with words? Or how does it come together? And then how in the world does the drummer wind up doing that? Does the guitar player come up with that with the bass player and the lyrics all behind it?
That song actually, so me and Ryan, we used to actually live together. And in our old band, that's where we would jam and everything like that. So just fiddling around one day, I started playing something on the bass and he was just like, oh, keep doing that. And he just sat down on the couch, wrote the lyrics, and then we put it all together. And then that was the only song that carried over to this band from our old band.
It just grew
with, with the adding of the new members and stuff like that. And
I can't tell you like a definitive answer for how you write a song. I can just tell you that every song we write comes together very differently in that one was written within 20 minutes. It really was. The lyrics, all of them. And that one came really easy. And, you know, a lot of the times, those are our most popular songs, whereas our sort of biggest release from our last EP was called Touch. And that one, holy, it was a process. It probably took about 2 weeks, probably like 10 different versions, dealing with our producer, him sending back some ideas. Then finally, when we went to record it, we found the structure and found sort of that one was hard to write.
Hey, are you guys writing notes? Like, do you write notes? Like, is there sheet music?
No. It's muscle memory in a way, too.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, that's crazy to me.
Well, it's a lot of it that has to do
with
we are
music,
not
man.
Schooled musicians.
None of us can read music besides our drummer.
Yeah. Really? Okay, so that's fascinating to me, you know, because I often thought, you know, that from the classical standpoint, you know, you read the music, but so these guys would come in with a bass guitar and Ryan would have some guitar and some vocals and you just polish it off with what you thought would work
on that song.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cause it comes different each time. Sometimes Ryan will come with a completely already written acoustic vocals. And then we add on to that. Mm-hmm. Other times Brandon will come in with a riff that we'll add on. Sometimes we're all just sitting around the room and someone pushes a note and it goes to a different note. And we're like, oh,
a lot
cool.
of times you end up with, and well, this is me personally. I have so many like 1 minute recordings on my phone of little things you'll hear. Like, well, I was saying earlier, like, yeah, when you come up with a melody, it's just like you hear something in your mind and you whistle it. And then you sometimes just record yourself whistling it and then
Crush.
You translate.
Right.
A good way to sort of, I guess, one of the other terms, let's go back to the beginning of the interview. You were watching your nephew play in the backyard at the birthday party today. And what did you call it? What were they doing?
They were just playing, man. They're just creative, just free play.
Free play.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's our best songs. We just go in, no thought process. These guys start doing stuff and it's like, that's cool. I'm going to go in the other room here, work on lyrics, go over that a million times and we'll come in and we'll just, I don't know.
That's how Staring at the Sky was written.
But there's no definitive answer for
the new
you.
Release.
That song was written in like 15 minutes.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I love it. Yeah. I love it. So let me guys ask you this as a band now. Okay. So, this is personal questions now.
That's so fine, everybody, man.
Hey, if you have questions, get to us on the text, let us know. But, the sound of the band, how did that come about? Was that just an organic thing as well? Or is that something you deliberately approached? Because you guys have a unique sound and I dig it.
I think a lot of that has to do with my voice is a bit different, you know, unique. And I would also say that I guess the only real mantra we've ever had as a band together is keep it simple, stupid. You know what I mean? Like a lot of bands will have two electric guitars going at the same time, which works for so many. And a lot of bands, some of the best bands in the world have that. We've just found that giving things, each instrument, its own room to breathe has worked for what we want to do. And
your
how
own
we
style,
sound.
Having something that
I think
you feel
we,
is-
we knew we wanted to be a rock band and that's just as far as it went. And whatever else came out of it, just did.
Yeah, everyone has their own style of playing. And when you put us all with completely different styles together, it comes up with something different.
Yeah.
So is there an influence on you guys? Let's go individual. Lucas, was there an influence for you?
Growing up for me, it was hard rock, heavy metal, a little bit of punk here and there, but like bands like Pantera, Rage Against the Machine, Slayer, that's kind of the stuff that I really, really like. Mm-hmm. And as you know, getting older and stuff, I not really moved away. I still love my metal, but I've found appreciation in a lot of other things, kind of like old country music, polka music, alternative rock, pop music. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Brandon, we kind of know where you come from, sort of like 80s rock style. That was sort of your wheelhouse.
Yeah, when I started playing, so it was basically, yeah, kind of like that 80s rock big band kind of style thing. And then I guess guitar wise, it was trying to find a way to bring all those influences together, but make it more lyrical. And by that, I mean more melodic.
So we ask our athletes often if there was an athlete you sort of modeled yourself after. Was there a guitar player? Was it an Eddie Van Halen or an Angus Young or Slash?
It's so
or...
cheesy. Oh, well, yeah. Slash. Yeah. yeah. So growing up, I was a bit really influenced pretty much by any like big 80s band guitar player, but Guns N' Roses, I would say, was like my favorite band growing up.
And there's some pretty influential characters there, man. Wow. And they influenced a generation. Rhymeley.
For me personally, just being the writer and the acoustic kind of, I've always liked storytellers. I also think that the band Fleetwood Mac is fantastic.
Yeah. Great stuff, guys. Yep. Okay, so with a couple minutes left, what's next for you guys? We have the Grey Cup coming up.
We're recording.
Yeah,
that's the next big project. Yep. We're shopping producers, and they're coming to us this time, which is new for us.
Yeah, congratulations.
Which is cool. Yeah, so that's right now. We just this past week sent demos off to some people, so we're waiting for word back, and that's the next move, man. New material. We're out of it.
Okay, so quickly, listen to this. So when we sit down with an individual high performer that we're, whether it's a young player going to college or trying to sign pro, or whether we get a consulting gig with an organization, whether it's a business or certainly in the sporting world, a player agent or a team or an organization, there's three things that that I ask and sit down first and we get really clear. Three things that I just need to know that the organization or the individual has an idea on. One is, do they understand where they're at right now in terms of, do they have a clear picture of where they're at and their passion for what they do, which you guys have without question. Number two, do they have a realization of a real clear, definitive realization of where they want to be? And I don't know if that would be chart topping for you guys or whether it would be album sales, or I don't know how you would measure that in the music world. But for our guys, it's like a draft or it's like a world ranking, that sort of thing, something very tangible. But number three is the business side. And this is something often overlooked, especially in the sporting world, the financial model that goes behind driving it. Because if you don't have that in place, and it's one of the most overlooked and I think underappreciated facets of human performance is managing the business side of it. You guys, the music industry is a massive, massive business. And I'm sure at every level, that's a big part of it. Are those the kind of balanced things you guys, to allow you to be clear on your approach to your music, get rid of all the garbage, you keep the other stuff pretty tight? Are you conscious of that, or do you have good people around you?
No, it's all sort of there. It's all in the sphere and all that. But I think for us, as far as goals are concerned, it's always been brick by brick, little victories, and then they just pile up. And I don't know if I'd say we'd be here 5 years ago. You know what I mean? First, the goal is when you start a band, like, let's get a song on the radio. You got that. What's next? Let's get more songs on the radio. Oh, let's get a song on a TV show. Let's get a song. Let's get on with Crush.
Yeah, that was the number one.
You guys made it, man.
For real, though, it's those little bricks that you put in place, and I think
you have to have a goal too.
Yeah,
right. Like, yeah,
I think all of our goals is
with your brand.
We want to do this. As number one job, you know, that is the goal. This is what we want to do.
Think of it like a business.
Hey guys, last question. We got to get out here. We're a little bit over. Last question. Maybe Rhymeley for you. Sure. Is inspiring young people part of the plan? Is it inspiring people in general?
I mean, for me,
you're going to,
the biggest kick you get is people coming up to you after and like, telling you that your song made a difference in their life.
Yeah, man.
And it's picked up an instrument
or want an autograph. Like,
it's so weird.
I'm installing your cable on Friday and you want an autograph for me on Saturday. Like, it's very bizarre, right?
Hey, but you guys know you're impacting lives. Okay, guys, thanks so much
for
coming.
Thank you.
We got to get Crush. Everybody, thanks for tuning in today. Really, really had a great time with Whale and the Wolf. You guys are on at Grey Cup, and check out their website, whaleandthewolf.com. You guys, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. War on Sugar on Crush Performance. See you then.
Thanks, Crusher.
Thanks so much.
I don't belong. I say we set it on fire. Maybe we just don't belong. I say we set it on fire.
Goodbye now. this is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We're catching up this week with a man of his word and a man who's on the Fox fast track, so to speak. Please welcome Tyrus. I was wondering what your thoughts were on the WWE show Crown Jewel that took place in Saudi Arabia. There was a lot of controversy behind that. I'm wondering, as a news guy and also a wrestling guy, what your thoughts on WWE doing that show were.
First of all, I support the WWE 100%, and here's why. One, they are the WWE's entertainment, and they've always done a good job of staying out of the political spectrum. They don't lead one way or the other because they know they have fans on both sides of the aisle. I had the privilege and opportunity to be the first match in Russia. I think it was in 2013 or 12. And at the time when we went to Russia to do shows in Russia, there was a lot of stuff going on about Russia. There was the Crimea situation. The year before, they had some stuff going on with Georgia. There's always human rights issues with Russia. And we went out there. We did a show. We did a performance. And I remember that night after the show, I ended up having a drink with Triple H after the show. I remember he had some great advice about wrestling in places. They don't get to see these things, like what it is to be American, what it is to come from a free society. And if one kid watching that show has a different idea of what it is to be American, what it is to express yourself and follow your dreams and stuff, then we did our job. And it's the same thing in Saudi Arabia. Like, if any group of people needed a chance to get away from it, have some fun, cheer, boo, be a part of the show, it's the people in Saudi Arabia. They're going through some monumental changes. Women's rights are still improving. It's still a long way to go. What happened over there was terrible. But again, the WWE is entertainment, and there's a lot of troops in Saudi Arabia too. So it wasn't just the Saudi Arabian people; also the troops get a chance to see a little bit of home. And only the WWE can Hulk Hogan come out to "I'm a Real American" in Saudi Arabia, and they cheer him for it.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.